On Pilot TV this week, we are DTF. DTF St. Louis, that is, the new Jason Bateman, David Harbour show on Sky Atlantic. We're dipping our cowboy-booted toe back in the Yellowstoneverse for Taylor Sheridan's latest spin-off series, Marshals, on Paramount+, and finding out if it is indeed elementary to spin an established IP into a new arena with Young Sherlock on Prime Video. Plus, Kaylee Cuoco and Sam Claflin are with us on this week's show to chat all things Vanished. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And joining myself and Boyd Hilton this week is a freshly tonsil-free Steph Seelan,
yes,
who has dragged herself away from her convalescence to make a triumphant return to this pod. How are you, Steph? Crucially, has your voice completely changed?
No, it hasn't completely changed, but I am still in pain, but I've had a lot of drugs this morning, so I feel a lot better. But
drugs, anything to do with your tonsils coming,
yes,
out, or just generally?
No, to do with my tonsils, okay, steady. And as I said on Pilot Plus, you two definitely would not be able to cope with having your tonsils out.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't have
the pain threshold.
You absolutely don't have the pain threshold. Because it gets worse before it gets better. On day 5 to 10, you're in absolute agony. It's horrendous. It's like rip out your whole throat. And because you've got so many nerves back there, it's just horrendous. It takes 2 weeks. And by the end of this week, I think I'll be okay. But it's awful. And you two are both too weak to be able to cope with it.
Wow.
No,
fair.
I was going to say you're a hero for coming in and battling. Yeah, but now, I'm not so sure. Now that you're kind of accusing us as being weak, feeble.
Yes.
I didn't say feeble.
Quasi.
It was implied.
I just don't think you could. I'm just saying.
I think I'll be fine.
Prove it wrong, Boydie. Have your tonsils out next week.
Yeah, okay.
Just to prove it wrong.
Yeah, as we all know, we don't need our tonsils. So I've had my appendix out.
I was going to say, have you had anything out?
Yeah, just my appendix.
Have you?
My appendix burst when I was very young. I think I was like 13, 14. Or something, which is, you know, serious.
That is serious.
Yeah. It was absolutely the worst pain I've ever had, yeah. So
was it as bad as Steph's tonsils, though? That's a question.
I think it was as bad as Steph's tonsils, yeah.
How old were you when your appendix burst?
14, he just said.
13,
sorry,
14,
sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Just said, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just not listening now.
Oh, you're gonna fit in perfectly on this podcast.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay.
We can have a not listening to each other competition.
Yeah. We can, yeah.
Which, by the way,
would not work as well as it does on the Empire podcast. So.
Oh, scathing.
Wow. I feel attacked.
Having worked at Empire, I know that nobody listens to anybody else.
I mean, we try not to, if
you don't listen. You just wait to say whatever it is you want to say about the film, and that's what you do. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that works for me. So I should apologise to everyone who watches our YouTube channel, because there was no video again last week. But this was not my fault.
Why?
Because when I went to retrieve the footage, the hard drive that stores the footage of the podcast was missing.
Oh.
This feels like a job for Horatio Caine.
Oh. Oh my God. Who took it?
Oh, that's the question, isn't it? We need a CSI in here. No, it was actually Gary, the engineer. He took it out.
Gary.
Apparently the hard drive had corrupted, and therefore we didn't have a hard drive, so none of the video recorded last week, including Jennifer Garner, who came into this very studio to talk to Boydie, and didn't record either. So, yeah, that was wasted.
Oh,
the interview did go in the podcast. We just didn't have video.
But it would be nice to have the video though. Although, yes, having said that, she did make me, I did put a picture of me and her.
She so lovely?
She's absolutely
of course she is.
A delight and, you know.
Beautiful. I bet she's unbelievably beautiful.
Of course. And I'm there literally like the janitor, you know.
From Scrubs.
Yeah. Who she got to be in a competition or something. I guess, you know.
Yeah. It was, you do have big competition winner energy.
Absolutely. Mm. The video, maybe it's the saving grace that the video did not make it. Maybe I deliberately,
yes,
secretly.
Oh, Boydie removed the hard drive.
Yeah. Like the capture.
It was an inside job.
Yeah.
What did she smell of? Did she smell of like roses and just
this
loveliness?
Has got weird.
Yeah. I didn't, that would have been awful to have smelled her, but
no, but you would have smelled her because you were in her presence.
Right.
It's not that weird because lots of people online talk about how celebrities smell. They do.
What are these weird fetish subreddits that you subscribe to?
You know, because lots of people say some famous actors.
You're just trying to set me up, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
I'm going to be cancelled in answer to your question.
She looks like she smells of like
kittens
roses
and rainbows.
Yeah.
Everything about her is immaculate. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
Wow.
But I did ask her, as listeners will have heard. Do you remember I said in the plus that we recorded, or maybe in the main podcast, before I'd actually interviewed her, because James had the day off.
I did.
That I was going to ask her about being in The Invention of Lying with Ricky Gervais and how I went on set and met her, and I actually did. And she was like, oh, yeah. What's he talking about?
Oh, I remember you.
Of course I remember you.
I just couldn't stop myself. Oh. You know, it's like it was like literally 25 years ago, and I was expecting her to remember, but she feigned.
Yes.
I think she did remember you, Boyd, okay? So you should feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, maybe.
Right. Well, we know what Boyd has been watching this week, and it's Jennifer Garner. Steph, who have you been smelling this week?
Okay, so, right. Okay, strap in, because I've got a lot of things to talk about, because obviously I had 2 weeks.
You did.
Okay. Now, if you are having any kind of surgery, what I would say is if you could align it with some kind of Olympics, that would be great.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I watched a shit ton of the Winter Olympics, okay? Now, one thing I would say is don't watch the Olympics and then also take a lot of painkillers, because what starts to happen is you start to believe that you could definitely do all those events. So I was like, I could fucking slide down a huge icy slide. What? How high is that? I could get a gold. I could get Olympic gold. Have you seen skeleton?
Dive down an icy dive. I don't know what
an icy slide. They icy basically slide. Get on a platform and they just
the
go
icy
down
slide
a slide. Yeah. And then I thought I could be a free skier. It's fine. Obviously I can't, but that was great.
Have you a skier? Do you go? I can imagine you going skiing with Liam B. George, your husband.
I am from Luton. Do you think that I go skiing? Do you,
people from Luton are allowed to go skiing? What are you talking about?
They're
you don't
allowed,
have to ski in
but
Luton.
They don't.
Isn't there like a big snow dome in Milton Keynes?
Yes. Yeah, the snow dome. Mm. Yeah. No, I don't. I haven't. I'm not a skier. I try to avoid all kind of physical activity.
I bet your husband does it, doesn't he?
He doesn't ski. But
snowboard?
He doesn't do any of that. He does every other sport in the world, but I am not sporty. Mm. I can't do any sport. There's no sport I've ever found that I can ever do or want to do or like. So,
position clear.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, I watched a lot of Winter Olympics, but I just want to say other things that you can watch if you are recovering. I watched two shows.
I can't believe sorry to interrupt.
Yes,
you mentioned
interrupt.
The Winter Olympics because I was going to mention them as well. You haven't mentioned the curling, which was the absolute peak of the.
Why did you think the curling was
curling
because of
is,
the whole
curling has become a pop culture phenomenon.
It was from the last Winter Olympics. I know,
but
why
even
everyone's
more this time.
That.
Even more this time.
What
because
of the Canadian guy who was swearing everywhere?
The Canadian guy who was swearing, and allegedly some would say cheating. Others said swearing. No.
He double touched. I watched
thing.
That footage over and over again. Yeah. He double touched that stone.
This is what I'm talking about. This became the story of the games.
And Eileen Gu.
We missed out on gold yet again. From our men's team, and just the whole sport became a phenomenon. We got videos of little kids, sending their animals on a stone and that and the other.
I didn't want to talk about it too much because I know that James doesn't like any sport either.
You can't ignore that.
But can I just say, God, I wept so hard when Lindsay Vonn broke her leg. I was really upset because I really brought into the build up of Lindsay Vonn's making this triumphant return. She's doing it for 40 plus women. She's showing that you can ski and you can do anything. And then she...
That was like on the first day.
I know. Yeah, and it was so upsetting. Yeah. It was really... And when they airlifted and you heard her like scream, it was awful. Other things
that you can watch when you're having your tonsils out.
I don't know how I missed this, but I watched the first season of Watson. Why
is that the hospital one?
Yes, it is the hospital.
Yeah. It's the procedural where Watson opens a hospital.
Yeah, I think we're not
Maurice surprised. Chestnut. It's
yes, we reviewed it on this podcast.
Yeah. Oh, and but you said it was shit, didn't you?
Well, it's mediocre.
I mean, it's
best.
Okay. It's quite mid.
Oh, no, it's great. This is stuff that you can watch and then you can fall into a little bit of a daze. Wake up and then you're like, oh, no, I can still get the plot.
You're not even double screening or anything. You're literally just falling. TV you can fall asleep to, and it doesn't matter.
Recovery television. That's what I'm saying. That's not TV.
No, I'm with you. It's definitely an example of that.
Oh, so I was like, oh, no, they finished the operation now. Oh, okay. Oh, no. Oh, no, I still know what's going on. And I could have, fallen asleep for, 7 minutes. It was fine. I found it really enjoyable,
It was fine,
and comforting.
But it does what it does show, because this is topical, isn't it? Because we're reviewing today's reviews. But there's an extraordinary... I did research this, because I wrote a preview of the show we're talking about later. I don't know why I'm not naming it. Like, it's just surprising.
It's like Voldemort. You can't actually say what it is.
Young Sherlock.
Yeah.
And you'll see there's so many Sherlock-based shows. It's extraordinary. So, carry on.
Yeah, but I did enjoy it, and it, I love Maurice Chestnut. He was great, and I thought it was a good take on the whole Watson at Home. For me,
take at best.
Well, I'm saying recovery right. television. Anyway, recovery and the TV. Other thing, yep. which I bet both of you think is absolutely shit, is Running Point. Kate Hudson's.
I haven't seen it. What is it?
What?
Do you know about this? What the fuck is it?
What's Running Point?
Running Point is Kate Hudson. She takes over her family's basketball empire, and it's got Justin Theroux in it, and he's like written. It's
hang on, this rings a bell. Good. This rings a bell. It's because it is a show, isn't it? I think we'll probably find out that we reviewed it and talked about it in depth. I don't think we did. I think it was an option for 1 week, and I don't think we ended up covering it, unless I'm completely wrong and we literally reviewed it, which is also possible. But I do remember what it is.
Chet Hanks is in it. It's as a basketball player. It's I would say this is definitely recovery television, but it was also really enjoyable, and it's been renewed for a second season.
I mean, I love Kate Hudson.
You will love this.
Almost as much as Jennifer Garner. So,
do you?
I met her. This is my... You queued up
please,
the name
job. Please, go on. Tell me. How did you meet her?
I met her quite recently at the BAFTA screening of her rather wonderful Song Sung Blue film.
Yes.
About the Neil Diamond tribute act. Yeah. And she's absolutely...
Oscar nominated.
Yeah. Some would say she deserves it more than Jessie Buckley. Some might say. We'll see.
Okay.
Anyway, controversial.
Yeah. Then I watched How to Get to Heaven from Belfast. I did that and as a huge binge. I watched the whole thing. Wow. Did it as a huge binge. Loved it, obviously. I mean, God, this woman, Lisa McKee, she's just unbelievable.
Controversial show. A lot of our listeners have disliked it quite acutely, which I thought was quite interesting.
That is very interesting.
And where are you getting this feedback from?
The internet. Partly feedback direct, partly the subreddit, partly all over the place.
You've got to stop reading this.
Well, no, but it's interesting. A lot of the problems a lot of people have with it is my favourite, the tonal shifts. Like, they've been like, it's neither, and I did mention this, the kind of neither fish nor fowl thing. Like, is it a murder mystery? Is it a comedy? Because it dials up the sitcom stuff so much that the balance feels, I won't say off, because actually I think it worked really well, but the balance is unusual for a kind of a dramedy, in that the comedy is far more dominant than you would expect for that kind of show. I actually think it works really well, but I can understand why it can be quite Marmite for people.
I really enjoy kind of a genre fusion. So I think it comes off as hugely original. I'm surprised people don't like it. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. And actually, do you know what I'm also going to mention? And I'm pointing at you.
Okay.
Because I listened back to a bit of one of the podcasts where I championed Small Profits.
Never listened back.
No, but you know what? I can't remember what I was listening for. Anyway, Small Profits,
yes.
Where you, James, lover of all things sci-fi everything.
Yes,
okay,
sci-fi.
You called, sci-fi, and you said that Small Profits was a bit weird. Right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And of course it is.
It's
in a brilliant way.
It's self-consciously weird. Yeah. It's deliberate.
But I don't know how you could, I just don't think you can call anything weird when you love sci-fi. So anyway, I've really been meaning to say that to you. No, you can't.
Sci-fi is not by definition weird.
It can be completely straightforward.
It's speculative, but it's not weird.
No, but you said it was just typical.
It can be weird.
You said it was, but anyway.
Whereas what Small Profits is, it's deliberately off kilter and quirky. So it's self-consciously weird. It's stylistically weird. Sci-fi can be that, but it most often isn't.
My point being, there's tiny little creatures in it, and
homunculi.
Yeah, you often have tiny little creatures in sci-fi things, and you don't find that
that's
weird.
Tenuous. That's tenuous.
This is so gloriously reductive. It's almost like chaos here.
Wow. I'm just saying, anyway, my point being, I'm speaking as someone who speaks a lot to people about what they're watching. I mentioned Small Profits. Everybody's watching Small Profits and they really like it.
That's undeniable. Small Profits is an absolute
It's a huge hit,
it's
isn't
one,
it?
It's, I would say it's the most acclaimed and admired show of the year so far.
It's so charming and endearing. If you haven't watched it, I haven't finished it yet,
only because I just haven't managed to find the time to. But it is, I'm more than halfway through and it's fantastic.
You should go back and watch it.
Yeah. Should I?
Yeah, you should. It's good.
He's not going to. This is like all of those other shows we've ever talked about. It's going to be. I'm already looking forward to the battle to see how high it gets in the end of year chart.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, because it's going to be a very, very high in a lot of people's end of year.
Interestingly enough, the odds have changed for the end of year vote because now that we have a fourth person, the maths has changed, hasn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
So my votes get diluted by the fact that there'll be four people voting.
What you care about is your votes getting diluted.
True.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you probably weigh them somehow.
I mean, I'm sure I'll find some way to twist it to my evil designs, but nevertheless, you know.
Yeah. But then that kind of might go against Kay because I do like sci-fi.
Yeah.
So
Even when it's weird.
Even when it's weird.
Well, no, I don't find sci-fi weird.
With his little men.
What I'm taking on with that is you're saying something's weird when actually that's kind of equally as weird, growing homunculi in your shed.
It's not those. It's like you're comparing. The whole point about small...
profits.
Homunculi.
The whole point of it is that within its incredibly banal, you know, small suburban setting of a DIY store and all of these things that are very seemingly mundane, there's this magic thing happening in the middle of it, and that's the whole point of it, that the weirdness that's happening within the normality.
Yes.
Whereas in sci-fi, if a thing is set on an alien planet, you can have aliens on it, aren't you?
What I'm saying is essentially you either open your heart to fantasy or you just don't, okay?
I don't think that's how
that
it
is,
works.
That is, yes, it is.
No. Oh, God, anyway. Okay.
Anyway, I also watched Bridgerton.
I also watched Bridgerton. Funny enough, the Bridgerton gang are here in another studio as we speak.
We walked past them when we came in.
Yeah.
And Benedict Bridgerton is my favourite character. So I love this season. Check it out. It's good.
I'll go back to Bridgerton. I did really enjoy it to start with. Have you ever watched Bridgerton?
No, he doesn't watch Bridgerton because he famously loves Downton doesn't watch Bridgerton, which is just doesn't make any sense. Again, doesn't make any sense.
Because if I like one period drama, I must then, by definition, like all period dramas because I've opened my heart to period dramas.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Finally get it.
Okay. I finally understand.
Thank God.
Steph Brain. Okay, right. This all makes sense to me now. Dear God, Boydie, please save me. What have you been watching?
Well, I have been watching a few things. First of all, industry. So as this comes out, you know, I do my weekly
industry. Where you're at with industry. Yeah.
State of the industry with Boyd Hilton.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Thank you. It's the finale. As we come out today on Monday, it's the finale. It's the season finale. And I've alluded before to the fact that there's a whole... some people make this a spoiler. I don't know. But
Hang on. If some people consider this a spoiler, I'm going to say it's then
all
a spoiler.
No, all right, I'm going to put it in very, very generic. I've already mentioned it before, so I've already spoiled it. But
right.
For some listeners, but I'll be more vague this time. What happens in this series of industry, among many, many things, is that it ends up showing you how recent, topical, horrific news stories involving people, how that kind of thing could be happened and enabled by people who you wouldn't necessarily consider to be evil. And it kind of looks into the height of the financial global capitalist system allowing this thing to happen that I'm referring to is so interesting, the way it dissects that, you know, high society.
Yeah, sorry, but I don't really understand finance. What you're talking about. It's too vague.
No, it's like, I'm being vague.
My favourite thing that you've said is how this thing could be happened. That's my favourite thing.
Do you know what? I heard that and thought, do you know what? I'm not going to pick him up on that. I'm just going to let it slide.
And I thought, I'm going to park that in there.
Yeah, it's how it allows this thing that could be happened.
How it could be happened. Yeah.
People who watch it will know what I'm talking about. It's just extraordinary. It's so clever that there's a thread. This is how, another way to describe it. There's a thread through the series that only really fully comes to fruition. You understand what they're getting at and what kind of topical stuff has been happening recently that they are alluding to. Use the word allude to, which listeners often tell me I'm using wrong. And it's just extraordinary. It's just so clever, basically. You sit there going, oh, okay, that's what they're getting at there with that story. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
I know that's confusing now and bewildering.
Right. Yeah, it's more bewildering now.
Sorry.
But essentially, it could be happened. So check it out.
Yeah. But it's an absolutely phenomenal series of industry, the fourth. By far, you know, easily the best series so far in a show that has always been brilliant from the start.
Well, as you know, James and I are both, it failed the Bellend thing for us, didn't
yes,
it?
Yes, we so failed we both, the Bellend test, yeah, or it so, failed the Bellend test
so
for
So we both
us.
Haven't watched it, but I did say I was going to try and start watching it again, but then I accidentally watched Watson and Running Point, which are...
It's time well spent, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, yeah. You should give it. I understand that from him.
The Bellend, you don't.
I didn't even know you subscribed to the Bellend test, to be honest. I'm quite shocked and appalled that you do.
Yeah, I don't know whether I do. Sometimes I agree with James, sometimes I don't. I don't know where I'm at. I did think
Steph, once you open your heart to the Bellend test, It will always filter through.
I know what you mean, because sometimes it is really hard to watch a show when you just don't like anyone at all. And that was my problem with it. But there must be something that keeps you watching. So I'm going to give it another go.
No, I've never watched a TV show in all of history where whether I like them or not is the issue. I don't give a fucking shit whether I like them or not.
It's a lot of swear words.
It's completely irrelevant. In fact, some of the best shows in history obviously have full of do not pass this test. Succession being the really obvious example.
A show I do not watch.
You know, that's the whole point. And the industry likes Succession. I mean, they're very different types of shows, but they're dealing in similar, you know, worlds.
Maybe you're
milieu.
Right. Maybe you can watch things.
Of course
with hateful.
You can.
Actually, do you know what, James? The Shield, they're all pretty hateful.
Well, no, I disagree. I think they are very anti-heroic and they are morally compromised and they're clearly not good people. But I think you like
you
them
like
regardless.
You like them anyway.
And I think that's by design.
Okay. Anyway, what else have you been watching?
Industry. I have been watching The Capture, Series 3.
Yes.
And I don't know. Have you as well?
I haven't yet.
I don't know whether we're going to end up reviewing this or not properly, because there's so many different
shows. There's a lot of other new shows. And the rule is that new shows trump returning shows.
Yeah. So it starts on the Sunday of the week we're doing, so we're not reviewing it this week. There's other stuff we might have to review even on Plus next week, so it might not get a proper look
in.
So
it might end up in what we've been watching.
So that's why I mentioned
it. As it is now. Go for it.
Absolutely is. But I'm not going to do a proper review. It's also embargoed until... Right. The kind of
okay,
Friday.
Well,
and you've only seen the first two episodes.
I've seen the first two episodes. But all I'm going to say is and this is a spoiler case, we're not going to review it.
Hang on.
Oh my God.
There will be no spoilers for The Capture.
Not the storyline. The spoilers within our system.
Oh, I see.
It's podcasting.
All right. See, the unspoken rule where we're not allowed to say what we think of it. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
It's fucking brilliant. Okay. It is so good. I love the first two series.
Yes. But it's become more pointed now, given everything that's happening.
So pointed. Mm. And it's so cutting edge. Ben Channon, who writes and creates it, I think we had him on the live podcast?
He came to the 250th live show.
Yeah. And he then, you know, he has to keep his finger on the nub of all of this modern technology, facial recognition, deep fake, etc., all of that stuff. And it's so... it's so kind of touching upon everything that's happening now in that world. It's just unbelievable. And that was the case with Series 1 and Series 2. Now, it's even more extraordinary, and it shows you stuff that can happen in the opening scene. There's this opening scene where someone's running through Heathrow Airport. It reminded me a bit of the Mission Impossible film, the last one, the first part of which was had that...
Dead Reckoning
had that big airport scene, didn't it? Mm. Involving facial recognition to some extent. But it takes it to an even further, even more extraordinary degree. And the central story, episode one is one of the best first episodes of a series I can remember for ages. It's so clever what he's done with the characters that are coming back with Holiday Granger's main character. It's so smart what he's done, because he always works very hard at making something incredibly gripping and compelling and surprising, with lots of shocks and twists and turns all the way through. But he does some brilliant rug pulls all the way through. And it's like one after the other in the opening episode. And then it carries on that way. There's another incredible cliffhanger at the end of episode two, just in case the previous cliffhangers in episode one weren't enough. So I think this has now reached a new peak. It's up there with Line of Duty for me. I think it's got that similar kind of unbelievably, hugely fast-paced, gripping storyline, but also characters you totally believe in. You totally believe in, you know, in a particularly, she's brilliant, absolutely brilliant, Holiday Granger in that role. Okay.
So this is a classic third season peak?
I think it's a real third season peak, yeah. And I'm slightly annoyed that we're not reviewing this instead of certain shows.
Okay, we'll get into that later.
Hey, no one's more annoyed than me. I love The Capture, but the rules are the rules.
The rules are the rules. Yeah, we have our rules. So that's that. And I just want to mention, Vladimir is another one I've watched, but I think we will.
We're going to review that on Pilot Plus.
Do not mention it.
It's new.
It's new. It's going in.
It's going in. I'm going to mention Handcuffed, which is very much not in James's wheelhouse, but this starts on Monday. And Kay hosted the Q&A for this with Jonathan Ross, who's the host of it.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. I wasn't there. I'm not allowed to go to these things now.
Why?
Anything that Kay hosts, I'm not allowed to go to. I mean, and
you're not allowed
vice
to go.
No, she won't. I mean, I'm the same way. I wouldn't.
Oh,
want anyone.
Okay, all right. No. Oh, sorry. By your own,
It's a weird thing. Don't
you've
even
decided
ask.
You don't want to go to you don't want to put her off, and she doesn't want to.
Oh, doesn't want me to go and put her off. She absolutely will not allow me to go. I would allow her in strict certain circumstances. Come to one of my QAs to host. But
we should go to the next one. She doesn't heckle from the front row.
Yeah. Anyway, she hosts it very well, I'm sure. And this is the show where people get handcuffed to each other and have to live with each other for completely handcuffed. Everything, going to bed, having a shower, going to the toilet. It's extraordinary.
People will watch
like
such
a
nonsense.
Okay, right.
And the people who stay handcuffed together the longest win £100,000 between them, which is a huge prize.
Okay,
obviously.
Right.
And it's hugely entertaining, I have to
say. It is.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
really
reality
clever.
TV is not really... I like shows about... reality yeah. TV, like that Americans Next Top Model one, yeah. which is lots of people are watching, uncovering the Americans about Tyra Banks and how she just literally, she was awful and she still sort of doesn't care that she was awful. She goes, yeah, I was awful, but she doesn't care.
Right.
I know I mentioned a couple of pods ago about Biggest Loser. You know, they did a documentary on The Biggest Loser. Yes. And there's an American... So it seems to be very much a thing now of like looking back at old reality shows and saying why they're so terrible, which I really enjoy. But I always find it really hard. I don't know, maybe this is why you don't like reality TV as well. I find it really difficult to watch a reality TV show if someone hasn't... It's not... You know, they're doing something that's not like a skill. Or so, you know what I mean? Like, I can watch... like Dallas Cowboys... Cowboys Cheerleaders is great reality show, but you can't I could be handcuffed to somebody, so I just I don't know how that I just don't find it that entertaining. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I, as you know, detest this stuff
Love
with
Island,
every fibre of my being.
It's not like that though.
Okay,
this is more of a I know it's a cliche, but it is more of a social experiment because they deliberately pick they're not randomly put together. The producers have deliberately picked people of opposing social standing or class or race or politics. So you've got a right-wing old, literally like 80-year-old guy handcuffed to a young woman who is might be, you know, sexually ambiguous or whatever. It's just they're brought together opposites. And that's the whole point of it, really. Can you endure being handcuffed to someone who is completely the opposite of you? So it's actually genuinely fascinating.
Okay, that is
And immediately in episode one of the guys involved is what kind of tries to walk out and like is furious with the whole thing, even though they've signed up for it, obviously. It's definitely absolutely nothing like Love Island or anything
like that. It's not like a reality show, it's a game show, really.
It's kind of more of a game show, yeah. But it's just, and a social experiment. It's genuinely intriguing. To watch.
Are there any reality shows you have watched and enjoyed? Anything at all?
I watched one episode of The Traitors, and I appreciated the craft that went into putting it together. And it feels like if I were ever to watch a reality show, which, and let's be honest, I never ever will, that would be the only one I would consider because that's like the peak TV, that's the prestige drama of reality shows, right? Like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So. Yes, and then
someone will appear on Traitors, Celebrity Traitors, who you will really like.
Yeah,
this is my hope.
And then I'll watch it.
And then
yeah, like
watch
Patrick
it. Okay.
Stewart will be on it or something. But Patrick Stewart could easily be on it. In fact, maybe he is on it.
Yeah,
who knows?
Taylor Swift does Celebrity Traitors.
I mean, you know, who knows? Yeah, that would be a good booking. But yeah, that would make you watch, wouldn't it?
It would have to be someone I genuinely was really interested to see what they
were. But so even in like the real genesis of it, you never watched any Big Brother, you never watched anything like that.
No,
because I used to love Big Brother
human being.
No.
I mean,
dreadful.
James defines himself by his opposition to reality TV. It's not a casual thing. It's part of my identity. Yeah, it's part of his identity. Yeah.
Have you ever watched Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders?
I've never watched that either.
What do you think, Steph?
I've never watched that show. I didn't even know it exists. What is it?
Netflix,
I mean, obviously the title.
Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders basically follows...
What channel is that?
It's Netflix.
Okay,
so Dallas Cowboys Cheerleaders, it's these women, these incredible athletes who go through this grueling process to become a Dallas Cowboys Cheerleader. And these women are athletes.
Don't men get involved in cheerleading now? Is it still just women? Is it?
This is not male cheerleading though. This is like all the females.
But then aren't they mixed though? They don't have mixed cheerleading.
No, they don't have.
Really?
No, this is the Dallas Cowboys. It's brilliant. If you haven't watched it, it's really.
We are 37 minutes into this podcast and we haven't even got through what we've been watching.
I know, we haven't even got to you, right, James? I'm going to stop.
I can't even
stop.
With
go,
this.
Go.
Well, funnily enough, I was watching Big Brother the other night, and no, I wasn't. Of course. What have I watched? And do you know what? I'm going to go through this really, really briefly, just for the sake of all our listeners' sanity. I have been watching Paradise, which we reviewed on Pilot Plus.
Yes.
I was surprised the first three episodes dropped straight out the gate, which is interesting, which makes sense because it takes until the third episode for you to get back into the, you know, silo, if you will. So that was fun. I've been enjoying Paradise quite a lot. I have finished the first season of Broadchurch and stormed straight into... I'm now halfway through the second series of Broadchurch and I'm utterly obsessed with the show.
By the way... By the way, sorry, I know we are running it very late, but a lot of people have come up to me and said, can you believe James is just fucking watching Broadchurch? It's embarrassing. People have been absolutely, they find it hilarious.
What, that I've just discovered Broadchurch?
I've had literally two or three different people, some of whom are quite important, famous people, talented people
really?
On TV, yeah, say, James is just watching Broadchurch. What the fuck? I was like, yeah, yeah.
I just, but do you know
at
what?
At least you like it.
I got to the end of Broadchurch and I was genuinely thinking, did I watch this? I might have watched it.
Well, originally. Like,
yeah, I don't think I did. I don't think I did ever watch the whole thing. But I definitely knew who the killer was, but had forgotten. And genuinely, and I'm not going to say it here just in case anyone hasn't seen Broadchurch, but I didn't...
Everyone's seen Broadchurch. I was
guessing and guessing, and obviously you figured it out by like the penultimate episode, obviously, because you're supposed to have her. But I was, wow, like this is... It was so good. I was properly obsessed with Broadchurch and got so into the kind of the, you know, all the different personalities in the little town. So the second series I have really mixed feelings about, because I'm really enjoying it, but I was expecting it to be another murder, not essentially the trial of the person who was guilty of the first killing. The only issue I have with it, and I'm not going to get into too much details again for spoilers, but I didn't really buy that, because the whole point of the second series is the person who was discovered to have done the killing in the first one pleads not guilty. So it actually goes to trial. And you're like, you confess to like three separate people. Like, and I'm fairly certain they monitor the cells because you were discussing it with the father of the deceased in the final episode. And it's like, did they just forget about all of this?
No. Crucially, you, right.
Okay. No, I know what happens. I know that like the actual official confession is compromised.
Yes.
And that's it. But they talk about it with other people as well. And those people are never called as witnesses. I have questions for Charlotte Rampling. I have questions for the barrister.
God,
I don't think
Charlotte Rampling.
Oh my God, the talent on display here. Charlotte Rampling turns up. Eve Myles turns up. Fucking Phoebe Waller-Bridge turns up.
Yeah.
It is wild, the stacked bench of the show.
But it's very true to the legal procedure, because just most people who you go, well, they definitely did it, plead not guilty, because you have to prove it in a court of law. And it's very
But did they do that
difficult.
After they've confessed to multiple people that they've done
it? Yes, they do, because those confessions are inadmissible.
Don't challenge Steph on her crime, true crime.
That's
knowledge.
True. I shouldn't.
But she is right. I do tell you. You're absolutely right. Yeah, you can confess, because people claim confessions were kind of, you know, forced out.
Coerced.
Yeah, like coerced confession. Yeah.
Confessions don't mean anything. And you're always advised, almost 90% of the time advised by your lawyer to plead not guilty.
And even sometimes you can do the crime and, you know, let's just, OJ, do you know what I mean? Like, you can clearly have done it.
True, yes. And then, you know, later kind of admitted it.
But you're in the middle of season two.
I am on, I think, episode 6 of season 2, or series 2, since the British show.
Isn't there also a murder case at the same
Well,
time
no, though? There's so it's the Sandbrook murder. So it's the one
the
that's
old
the, yeah,
case.
The David Tennant's old case.
Yes.
That is kind of circling, like percolating in the background. But it's all about, like, you know, the small town, like, frictions. I'm getting very into it. Also, Pauline Quirk is brilliant in this.
She's
Pauline
great.
Quirk is brilliant. Eve Myles is so good in this.
Eve Myles is very,
season.
Very good. Yeah. Pauline Quirk is so surly and, oh, she's just awful,
but
in the best way.
Yeah.
So, it is ridiculous that I've just discovered Broadchurch. I am aware of that. And, you know, if we hadn't reviewed Under Saltmarsh, I never would have jumped back into this.
Yeah, was that? Yeah.
Because I remember you saying, this is the absolute gold standard of these shows. And I was just like, I don't think I ever finished it.
Have you continued watching Under Saltmarsh?
No, because I'm Broadchurching and I only have one at a time. But I will go back to it.
Please go back to Under Saltmarsh because it continues to be absolutely brilliant. It's so. Have you finished Under Saltmarsh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, clearly,
I'm
becoming
really is the benchmark.
Yeah, I'm becoming a crime
Do
addict.
Do you know why? Because you've opened your heart.
I've opened my heart to it.
Rural crime.
Rural crime is now my
go-to.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to disown you if you go cozy, but apart from that,
I will
never
go cozy crime. Don't worry. The other thing I have been doing is not watching something but playing something. But if you can talk about films, I can talk about video games, especially because this one is TV adjacent.
Okay.
I have been playing and have been obsessed with Star Trek Voyager Across the Unknown, which is a new Star Trek Voyager game that I've been playing on PlayStation. And I'm absolutely obsessed with it. Absolutely obsessed with it.
What do you have to do in it?
So for people who play games, it's like a cross between Fallout Shelter and FTL. Like, it's a procedurally generated kind
FTL?
Of like survival sim. FTL.
It's a what does
game.
That stand for?
It's a game. Faster Than Light. But
what?
Faster Than Light.
FTL.
FTL.
Oh, it sounds like you said F.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. And basically, the idea is you have to survive in the Delta Quadrant, like it's the plot of the game.
Yeah, okay, right.
But and you have to like do resource management and like build out your ship, and then you'll get attacked by like tribbles will break out on the ship, and you have to deal with that. But what's really fun about it is like it's quite lo-fi and it's quite texty, and they have like they got the actors who play Tuvok, Tim Russ and Tom Paris, come in, and they're the only people doing voices, ain't anyone else, and they sound quite old when they're doing it. But so you have a couple of voices, but really you see pictures of the crew members, and then you just get their dialogue. But you get to send them on away missions and stuff. But essentially, you replay many of the episodes from the show.
That's
so
quite fun.
For me, the reason I'm enjoying it so much is I said, I remember this one. I know what happens. And so you reenact it. And obviously, you can change
what happens. That's what I was
going to
say. Is it like, it's like choose your adventure type thing?
Yeah, so you can change how it goes down. So like the bit where Tuvok and Neelix get combined by the transporter and turned into a one being called Tuvix. Like in the game, you can decide not to split them apart again and just have Tuvix as part of your crew. And you can do stuff like that. And as a Star Trek nerd,
it's
I'm loving
Star
stuff
Trek.
Like that.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it like a joystick game? Is it like a typey game?
It's a joystick game. It's on a game console.
Do you get your joystick involved before we had to edit it out because of a mistake? And I'm still reeling from that question.
Okay. Guys, I don't do games. So how do you do it?
You do use the controller, but yes, you're more clicking on things than you are, steering things, if
steering
that helps.
Things.
And choosing dialogue choices, like you have to make decisions. Because you're Janeway, you're essentially Janeway.
I'd love it if you actually could get like a whole Star Trek like panel and then you could do it like you were on deck.
Yes.
That would be great.
Well, it doesn't quite work like that.
No,
but I'm having a lot of fun with it. I've just got past the Scorpion episode, so Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, has joined the crew. So that was very exciting.
Oh,
but yeah, I have spent so many hours reliving Voyager's journey through the Delta Quadrant.
Oh.
And like I was like, I know this episode, so I know what to do because I remember what
happened. But you shouldn't do the thing that you know what happens. You should see what happens if you do something different.
Yeah, but I like to be canonical. You know, like I like to... Although I did...
Nothing if not canonical.
Well, there is one episode. Now I have two B'Elanna Torres as part of my crew. I have a Klingon one, a full Klingon one and a half Klingon one, because the full Klingon version of her dies in an episode, but I kept her alive.
Is it one of those games where people can come in as well, like from the outside? Oh,
no, it's
just
a single player game. Yes.
Solo, single player.
Single player survival game.
Okay.
But yes, I'm enjoying a lot. I did review it for Empire. I gave it 3 stars. But if you are a massive Trek head, it's definitely a 4-star experience.
Boyd, will you be getting your joystick out and playing with the
Jesus Christ. No,
Star
I
Trek.
Will not. No. And in fact, that's made me feel a lot better for droning on at length about what I've been watching.
Yeah.
And you droning on at equal length about what you should be watching because he's talking about a fucking video game.
Okay. So
yes.
I think we're all absolved.
Yeah, we're all absolved.
It's TV-centric. I'm just saying it is on brand.
Okay.
Mm. Right.
Tenuous.
3/4 of an hour into this podcast, that's what we've been watching. I am so sorry for everything.
But to be fair, it did take you about an hour to record the intro.
Oh, you did 17 intros.
Yes, but no one listening to this knows that.
Yeah, that. No. Well,
they do now.
It's time for a listener question. And Steph, it's all about you.
Oh.
Because the subject line was Steph! Exclamation mark.
Oh.
And this one comes from Jake. And Jake
says... Is it nice?
You're going to find out in a second.
Okay.
Jake says, I was just wondering if there was a possibility on either the main pod or Plus... if Steph could have a regular feature where she could recommend an old or new true crime-related TV show.
This isn't the question you sent us.
I sent YouTube. This was the second one. I only sent it to Steph. But Steph, who clearly didn't read it.
Yeah,
But now this is not going to become a regular thing. I'm so sorry, Jake, but we're going to do it now as a one-off segment. And I have decided we're going to call this segment, this one-off segment, Crime, Boyd I Don't Know, But Steph Does. There we go. See, that's a laboured West Wing reference.
First,
anyway.
We could definitely have it as a regular. Okay, right.
Is it going to be Broadchurch?
No, it's not, because it's true crime and Broadchurch is not a true crime.
That's a good point.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. Fell down at the first hurdle.
Well, I tell you what is good, actually. I was just putting together a list of some really good true crime. So actually, this is really handy, and I've got some at the tip of my tongue. So, if you haven't, the first one I would say, which is a documentary called Long Shot, which you should definitely watch, Boyd, because it's a man who was wrongly accused of a crime. And the reason he was... I don't know whether to give it away. I need to give it away. Right, so
Hang on. If you're recommending the show, you definitely cannot spoil the show.
You will know, basically, there is a TV show is filmed... and the man is absolved of the crime.
Oh, I know
the
story.
Do you know?
Yeah,
you know the story.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's one of Boyd's. It's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What? Yes.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. are filming something. Okay,
uh-huh. It was in a basketball stadium, wasn't it? And
a baseball stadium, and they have footage of this person, which proves that this person's not guilty. It's a crazy story. Larry David's on this documentary.
Because it gives you the alibi. You know,
that person's alibi is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Have you heard the story? Yeah, it's a famous story.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Story.
If you haven't watched it, I mean, you haven't heard it. So it's really good. It's Netflix. It's fantastic. Mm. I would also recommend, so that's Juan Catalan, and he's on it. Larry David's on it. It's almost too insane to believe that
it
actually happened.
It's a great story.
The chance that he's a free man just because of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's crazy. Anyway, if you haven't watched The Staircase, Michael Peterson, please go back and watch a classic. I'm giving classics because I was just doing a list of classics. Course.
And is that the documentary or the dramatization? Because there's both, isn't there?
Were they both called The Staircase, were they?
They were. I would, Jean Lestrade's, I would watch his documentary, the original. I didn't enjoy the dramatisation. Did you, Boyd?
I thought it was interesting because it touched a lot upon the actual media coverage of it and how it was made and how the crew, so you kind of met the crew, didn't you? I thought it was interesting way of doing it.
But you meet the crew in the second, and they do a second part of The Staircase and you meet the crew. So I would go for that. I would also recommend The Keepers, which is an amazing story. Nun, Kathy Sesnick really weirdly reminds me of The Shield. I know this is going to sound strange because, right, so this nun is murdered in 1969 and this is an unsolved crime still, and it's how she got murdered, and it's all about kind of the corruption, the police corruption, and what happens and were they involved, and again, I'm not going to give anything away, but that's a great story and an unsolved murder. One of my favourite crimes ever, Lacey Peterson, was a pregnant woman who got murdered. Her husband, Scott Peterson, is still in prison for it. It's got Lacey Peterson, American Murder, is also on Netflix. People are saying now, there's been new evidence in the last couple of years that people are saying he didn't do it. My personal opinion is he 100% did do it. It's a classic one. They find out after she's been murdered that he was having an affair. And so everyone's like, oh, well, he definitely did do it. But make your own mind up, because it's a really good documentary. Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey, which is a story of Warren Jeffs. I love a cult. Absolutely love a cult.
I love a cult.
No, I do.
I'm joking over the fact that you have a favourite murder.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You did say that.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Everyone who loves crime has a favourite murder.
Murderous death cult. Your favourite murderous death cult is what?
There's so many good murderous death cults. But this one is Keep Sweet, Pray and Obey, and it's Warren Jeffs. If you haven't heard of Warren Jeffs, just watch this, because you need to know about Warren Jeffs.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned, for me, the show that kind of was responsible for bringing on this whole true
Making
crime.
A Murderer.
Yeah,
it's on my list. Okay. Making a Murderer. But I feel like everyone's watched. I feel like most people have watched Making a Murderer. I was trying
to... It doesn't sound like this dude has.
I don't know. I just feel like... Okay. Do you think?
It's quite a while ago. Younger people probably don't even
know. Well, Making a Murderer 1 and 2.
It's been a long time, isn't it? Since
yeah, and he's still inside.
Yeah.
But, that would be my kind of big list of five that I think you should start with. But I will, I can give you lists every week if you want.
More than
Is that enough for you?
Okay. Yes,
for
me. We'll call it Steph's Favourite Murders and we'll do a countdown.
Yeah.
And I know I mention this a lot when anyone asks anything about you, but please watch Night Stalker, which is, again, a Netflix one. I know I'm saying a lot about Netflix, but nobody does true crime like Netflix. They are absolutely the best. They really are, in my opinion. Mm. So there you go.
Well, yeah. Jake. You see what you've unleashed, don't you? I hope that has answered your question. If you would like to ask Steph a question about true crime, feel free to send it in. It's pilottv@empiremagazine.com, at least for now, because that address is going to change, but it hasn't yet. But it's that one for now. Yeah. Okay. It's time for this week's guests. And joining us this week are none other than Kaylee Cuoco and Sam Claflin, stars of Vanished on Prime Video, which we reviewed last week. And in case you weren't listening, that show sees Cuoco as an archaeologist whose boyfriend, played by Sam Claflin, vanishes on a train through France. The show is airing now on Prime, and both Kaylee and Sam spoke to Jordan about the show.
It is a real pleasure to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast two of the stars of MGM Plus's Vanished. We have Kaylee Cuoco with us, and yes, we did find him. Sam Claflin, how are you today?
I'm still looking for
myself.
Where
is Tom?
How are you both today?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, I've finished all four episodes. Congratulations on the show. If you'd have given me 100 guesses as to what was going to happen maybe every 5 minutes in the show, I think maybe it'd take me 95 guesses to get even remotely close to what was going to happen.
That's good.
Well, yeah, so, well, at least you'd get there. I feel like I had no idea.
I've been around the block a few times with a thriller or two, but I was still sort of scratching my brain for a lot of this.
That's great. That's what you want.
Yeah, it's very exciting to hear.
but what I guess a good place to start is, when you guys were first reading the scripts for this, were you having that experience too of just like next page, what's going to happen?
I definitely didn't know what was going to happen, which obviously you want. You don't want to be guessing it right off the bat, although I do try. So that I enjoyed, kind of wondered where, I actually didn't know even what was going to happen to the very, very, very end, what the decisions were going to be. So that was fun. And I like that it's four episodes. It feels like one kind of cool movie, you know, that kind of, it's quick and it moves fast and it's beautiful to look at. And yeah, it's just my type of TV. It's the type of TV that I like, that I enjoy.
I think Kelly's right. I think the fact that it is four episodes, you knew, you feel the ending is coming. But I like yourself, I was trying to sort of second guess constantly where it was going ahead of time and never predicted where it was going. The fact that each episode sort of left with such an impactful kind of cliffhanger, forced me to read all four like very, very quickly. I think looking back in reflection, knowing that it kind of completely took me for a ride and I had no idea of which direction it was going, who these people were, it really, really resonated with me and like left its mark. I had to get involved, you know.
You both touched on something really interesting there with the format of the show. Obviously, it's four episodes. And as someone that watches a lot of TV for work, I really appreciated the fact that there was a real sense of authorial confidence in the sense that it was like, okay, we've got four episodes here. There's no fat on this thing at all. You can essentially watch it like a 3-hour film with like tiny toilet breaks in between. But obviously, like for me, I have the benefit of binge watching it because I got sent the screeners. It's being released as a weekly dropper, which benefits from the cliffhangers that you've got. You've got these really juicy cliffhangers each episode. Do you guys have a preference when you're watching stuff at home between whether you like to save something up and binge it or whether you like to go, okay, I'm going to watch one now, going to save it a few days, watch the next one?
I go back and forth with that. TV is so interesting now, right? You've got shows that are four episodes. You've got full seasons, 24. You've got 8, 12. It's not what it used to be. It's all over the map. So I guess it depends on the show. I like a binge personally. I like to stock them all up and binge because I don't like when it's over. But that's just a personal preference.
Yeah, I think there's nothing worse than kind of finding something 5 episodes in when there's 10 episodes, binging it for a little while and then having to wait. Mm-hmm. I'm much, much more of a binger myself. I love to binge. And 4 episodes, I think the great thing is it's perfect for a end of night thing where you've always got enough for 2 or 3. But then if there's only one more, you're not going to wait for a whole other night. So it's going to force people to watch that fourth one, I think.
I'm kind of the school of thought that if the whole box set's there, I'll watch the whole thing at once.
Yeah.
If it started its run and it's like, oh, it's 4 episodes in, like you're saying, Sam, like I'll just wait then until the whole thing's finished and then I'll go all at once.
The hard thing is when people start talking about it, you know, I remember when Severance came out and everyone was talking about Severance. I was like, well, I can't not. I was sort of itching at the bit because I wanted to be part of the conversation.
It's hard with social media now. It's hard with social media to be behind any of it because you're going to get answers on everything. You're like, oh God, I can't open my phone. They're going to spoilers, you know?
Yeah. I feel like with this one, especially, you don't want the secrets to be spilled. You want that kind of roller coaster ride that you go on with it. But something that really struck me when I was telling, because obviously I tell friends and family, you know, I'm interviewing this person this week, this person this week, is that everyone that I know knows both of you best for something very different. So like my father-in-law and I bond over all of Peaky Blinders together. Yeah. My best mates at uni, like we all love Big Bang Theory. Then my wife and I, literally in the car on the way to school with the kids, will listen to Daisy Jones and the Six. Like, we've got this such wide pool of references for you both, which I think speaks to not only your range as actors, but also the range of stories that you're interested in telling. So I was just wondering for both of you now, at this moment in your careers, what is it that you're actually looking for when a script comes your way? And what was it that Vanished had that made you go, okay, this is going in the resume?
Oh, gosh. I think this time in our business is so different than it used to be. I mean, I'm thinking back to Big Bang Theory days, which is, feels like so long ago, but life was very different back then. And I think making anything now is so difficult, and getting a job and getting it on its feet and tying it up on a bow and like releasing it to me is like such a big feat. So when something comes in that's actually ready to go, I think it's like way more rare than it used to be. And being able, you know, after these last few years and kind of having these dips with the strikes and all these things, this felt like secure. And also, again, I fell in love with our director, Barnaby Thompson. I really wanted to work with him. There was something very special about him. And it's a father-son duo. His son wrote it, or wrote it later. Didn't write it, but fixed it later. And they worked together as a team. And there was something that I loved about that. And I wanted to work with Sam and, you know, obviously working in France. And there was just, again, I think at this point, a lot of boxes that were checked. And then I like this type of TV. I like, you know, the big-eyed, where are we going? Where's she going? What's happening? Did he do it? She do it? Who's good? Who's bad? It's just what I enjoy watching. I prefer a little more comedy. I tried to get it in here, but this
Oh God, really did.
They were really suffocating me. They're like, no, this isn't funny. Stop being funny.
It was nice to explore the sort of episode one, which is sort of more the romantic stuff, or the sequences when we were actually together.
Yeah.
It was nice sort of, we did that at the end.
Yeah.
It felt like we were in a romantic comedy.
Yeah. We tried.
Yeah, it's a real bait and switch, isn't it?
We kept getting tempered. They're like, it's not really a romantic comedy. I was like,
just remember where this is going. Yeah, but we're having fun. Yeah. We're in love.
Yeah, exactly.
It was halfway through episode one, like, I'm going to say, maybe we watch this with the whole family together. And then it gets
takes
a turn. Yeah. Maybe we watch that separately.
Yeah.
So many things. I've got this long list of different things to ask about the show, but something that you both sort of touched on there is like how you'd both wanted to work with each other. And I sort of talked about your vast body of work already. But had you guys' paths ever crossed at like social events or like award shows or anything like that before this, or were there any specific projects of each other's that had kind of put you on each other's radar before you started doing Vanished?
We never met.
No, this was our first.
Did you ask about me?
I did, always. Every day, every day.
Oh, every day.
Where is she?
Is she a pain in the ass today? I think that you do, I feel like I asked people that knew him. He's very beloved in the business. Like,
really?
Yes.
Aww.
Everyone, I mean, come on. Everyone loves him. He's an absolute joy. So that was, everyone was like, yes. Oh my God. Yes. People love him.
But I equally, I was sort of very aware of Kaylee's presence. Strangely, I was talking to someone on the job that I'm working on now only 2 days ago, and I was saying, oh, my friend has this farm in LA of like rescue animals. She was like, Kaylee,
who was it?
Daisy Ridley.
Oh, yeah, yes.
She was like, oh my God, yeah.
Because I work with Tom.
Tom went out. So, but it was this, so that, you know, you're never too far. It's always 6 degrees of separation in this industry. And I feel like I knew enough people that knew Kaylee. And I was sort of also very aware of her previous work, but also her online presence and what she stands for. So you kind of get the idea that she's a good person.
And
I think that always allows you that kind of enough information to go, this is a safe environment. And
what surprised me so much about Sam early on is he makes fun of himself the way I make fun of myself. Like, he's so much fun. He's constantly laughing, which so am I. So to be able to be working with someone that really is very lighthearted, I find it's rare. It's very rare. All we did was a lot of laughing, which is important to me.
It feels like whenever I talk to anyone that's been in something with a particularly dark tone to it, you always get the stories of how like upbeat the atmosphere needed to be between takes.
Yeah, for the relief.
Just to keep the morale up, because else you just like go into a quiet hotel room and just sit with your head in your hands.
That's not good. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No, definitely not. I'm going to have to let you guys go very soon. I feel like this has gone very quickly, but something that it would be remiss of me not to ask about, just because I mentioned my wife and I listening to Look At Us Now in the car on the way to work, on the way to school every morning. When was the last time yourself, Sam, Taylor Jenkins Reid, and Riley Keough were in a room talking about an Aurora reunion tour that we never got to see? And Kaylee, do you have any musical talents, and might you appear on said tour given the chance to
guest star?
Come join Daisy Jones at the Seven.
No, I haven't been in a room with Riley and Taylor recently, but we have been in an email exchange because I think I was asked during this press tour, I was asked a question in America, like whether we were coming back to reunite. And I think that just sort of reignited, you know, a loving bond. And so we kind of reconnected in that way. I don't know if I can talk about the contents of said email. Not to sort of give people false hope, we're not coming back for season two, as far as I'm aware. But no, it was just, I think there's some sort of exciting things around the corner for Taylor, you know, and indeed sort of for us. But yeah, it's always nice to hear from them. They're you know, it felt they're family. And Kaylee's now part of my family.
Oh,
So in a sense, she's like the cousin that comes to visit for Thanksgiving. You know?
She's the Daisy Jones in the Seven.
Yeah.
She's Daisy's
sister. She's an honorary member
sister.
Of the band.
And no, I don't sing. That's my answer to that.
I don't know. You can
Did
sing.
Did I sing? No, I don't sing.
I feel like you...
I enjoy singing because I like to sing in the shower, but I'm not a good singer. No, that's not my talent.
You do have a farm full of rescue animals, though, and Daisy Jones and the Six did have a distinct lack of animals.
This is
stage,
it.
So.
Was it the Zonkey?
I have a Zonkey.
A Zonkey.
Loves that one. Yeah. The Zonkey. I feel like I showed you a picture of the Zonkey the first day we met. Yeah, I'm like, look at this.
Oh my God, I want one.
Yeah. I mean, Look at Us Now is a great song, but if there was a Zonkey solo somewhere in the middle of that.
Strangely, you brought that up because the man that wrote that song, Marcus Mumford, I just bumped into him.
That?
I just bumped into him in the hotel this morning.
Oh,
which
you're
is
kidding!
Like, hello.
Oh my God!
Yeah, so small world.
That is a small
that's
world.
That's Sam riffing in the corridor on a lunch break.
Serendipitous.
Banjo. Well, this has been great. Vanished is great. Whether people choose to binge watch it or piecemeal it out, I think that they will have a very good time with it. So yeah, congratulations on the show, guys.
Thank you.
And I hope that I get to see you both together in something again one day.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Vanished
I'm never
too.
Working with him again.
That was Kelly Coco and Sam Claflin, and it's time now for the news. Who wants to start?
Well, I'll tell you the news that broke just today, this morning, just before we convened for this longest podcast in history.
Do tell.
The Dr. Foster is coming back.
Yes, it is, yeah. for a third and final series.
Which took me by surprise because I didn't know about this. I genuinely had no idea that this was happening. People may have...
That's why it's called news, Boydie.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
You twat.
Unbelievable.
No, there's loads of new TV, you know, TV news breaks, and you think, oh yeah, I kind of knew that was in it, percolating away.
You hadn't heard any whispers.
I just hadn't
about
heard
it.
Any whispers, exactly. So it's come as a complete surprise to me. There may be more knowledgeable people like James.
Of course, James knew. James definitely.
I have never even watched an episode of Dr. Foster. Although,
Dr. Foster.
Actually, I think we reviewed.
We must have.
I think we reviewed the first episode of Series 2 on this podcast. But other than that, I've
Series 1 of Dr. Foster was fucking brilliant, right? You watched it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. And Series 2 was still really, it was good, not quite. It was not quite because there was an intensity to Series 1 and the whole was her husband or not having this affair, and it was so clever, the clues and the all of that. So anyway, it's Mike Bartlett wrote it, and he's back written another 5-part series with the original cast come out: Saran Jones, Bertie Carvel, and Tom Taylor, who was their kid. He was a little boy back in the first and second series, and now he's all grown up. Anyway, the story is 10 years on. Gemma Foster is now a GP, she's still a GP, she still lives in the same house, she's on the brink of a fresh start, she's met someone new and is getting married. But as the wedding day draws closer and friends and family gather, shadows from the past begin to reemerge, threatening both her happiness and her reputation. So it sounds like they're going to queue up a whole new sense of kind. Because there was that queasy sense of doubt, you know, what's going on? Are you being paranoid? Are you being gaslit? It was that kind of psychological thriller that I love. And they did it so well. Mark Bartlett wrote it so well. Both, I think, first and second series, particularly the first. So I'm really looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to this new series.
I think that's one of those shows that the first series was so perfect.
Yeah.
If it just.
It's hard to replicate that.
It's really hard. And I'm not saying that the second series was okay, but it was not the first series. Everybody was talking about that all the time.
I thought the ending was really clever, though. Do you remember the ending? Like, it was all on that motorway cafe.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really kind of
tense. But it wasn't the first. It wasn't. And you don't know because you didn't watch it at all.
No.
Okay.
Well, I watched the first episode of Series 2. I don't recall what I thought of it, but I didn't carry on watching it.
Okay.
So.
Fine.
There you go. Anyway, that's breaking news today, James.
You know what else is coming back, Boydie?
What?
Robin Hood.
Oh, I was going to say Robin Hood.
Steph, tell us, what else is happening
I literally was like, oh, Sean Bean's coming back. The Robin Hood thing's coming back. His modern twist on Robin Hood is coming back, which is very exciting.
Did you watch Robin Hood?
Well, people like it. I mean, I'm not...
It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. We didn't love it. I don't know whether I like any kind of Robin Hood. Oh, God, is this the new...
You haven't opened your heart to the show with Bandit, is this what you're saying?
I'm just trying to think.
You don't like a Bandit show either?
No, I do, but I just don't know whether...
The post-apocalyptic version of Robin Hood would be your absolute...
Do you like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the Kevin Costner film?
Yes, but I think I like it because of the time it was in. I was in the time when you went to the cinema. I went to the cinema to watch it and I liked it. And I like Kevin Costner, so yeah. So maybe that's the only thing. And actually, I like the cartoons. With the fox. God, actually, I'm really into Robin Hood. So yeah, I don't know. So anyway, it's coming back. Oh, it's reimagining of Robin Hood. It's previously been described as epic. So some people are excited. Yeah.
Some people are indeed excited.
Yeah. Do you know what else? Somebody mentioned on Planet Plus about For All Mankind.
Yes, didn't they?
And
yes,
that's coming back Friday, March 27th.
I know, but they put a trailer out.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
See, the episodes are available. I've not watched them yet because Broadchurch is consuming my every waking moment. God. But
well, not because of Broadchurch. I haven't had time to watch. I can't watch it.
But I'm excited to watch it. And the trailer made me more excited to watch it. Except, and people have pointed this out to me as well, but I did think this when I saw it. This is shaping up to be an origin story for The Expanse. Like, genuinely, it feels like this is like an Expanse prequel series. We're going to find out that is literally what's happened here, because at this point it's like Mars is almost breaking away from Earth. It's like a rogue colony and there's friction between Earth and Mars, so it does feel like this will in a few hundred years be The Expanse.
Okay. Oh, do you remember when you started watching music documentaries?
I watched the Counting Crows one, yes.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a new Iron Maiden documentary.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, no, do you know what?
It's a film.
It's a film. So forget I said it.
I never had you pegged as an Iron Maiden fan.
No, you completely stunned me with that story.
I literally could not give a shit about Iron Maiden, but I know that some people do. So, yeah. Oh, no, I don't like rock.
Like rock.
You shock me.
It's not rock, it's heavy metal, isn't it? It's like rock is...
It's now a good time for me to point out that Bruce Dickinson, the singer from Iron Maiden, used to teach fencing at my school.
Oh my God, that is brilliant. Wait, wait a minute.
Before or after he was a rock, huge,
after,
heavy metal?
As in you just while, said it wasn't during, rock. Yes.
During?
What, why isn't it rock?
He's a fencer, and he taught me fencing at our school.
You said I don't like rock. I'm just saying rock encompasses a gigantic array of popular music, right? It's like rock and pop, whereas heavy metal, which is specifically the genre within rock, I believe that Iron Maiden are described as, is more accurate.
I would say rock is like... You know,
that's exactly what rock is.
I mean...
Right. That's what Iron Maiden do, don't they?
I see. Yes.
All of that.
I mean,
Steph, have you ever considered moving from Heat to like Mojo, for example?
Yeah, with becoming knowledge.
A music journalist.
You might want to think about entering an air guitar competition, you know? Listen, viewers, if you've watched her going.
You're playing an air guitar as if it's some kind of mandolin. I have concerns over your technique.
Yeah, it's an air mandolin.
Yeah.
But there actually is a competition, an air guitar competition, isn't there?
Of course there is. We're entering you for it.
So, sorry, so that's a heavy metal. You would say that is heavy metal.
I feel like I should know this.
Okay, yeah. Right, heavy metal. Anyway, we shouldn't even be talking about it because it's a film. Sorry.
But what we could be talking about is that Amy Lou Wood is going to star in Jane Eyre, a new version of that story from...
She is.
...working title people. After I was reading the Variety version of this story, it says, following the success of Emerald Fennell's body-stripping take on Wuthering Heights, I mean, that was a film. I feel like they've gone down the same kind of problem that we often do on this podcast. We've ended up talking about films where it's actually the story's about a TV show. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Amy Lou Wood in anything is obviously going to be worth watching. It's also written by Miriam Bataille, or something about, well, Betty, how do you pronounce that? Who works on Succession, apparently. So that's a pretty good...
That is good.
...lineup.
Okay, there's a trailer for Madison, which is yet another
Yellowstone spin-off.
Another Yellowstone spin-off.
The Madison.
God help us.
Is it The Madison? The Madison,
yes.
But we do love Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, so, you know, that could be... You'll definitely like that.
Well, Sure. We'll get on to all things Yellowstone when we review Marshalls. But yes, that is another one that is coming.
In a couple of hours' time.
In a couple of hours' time when we get to the review section. That's absolutely right. Ryan Coogler has cast Danielle Deadwyler as the lead in the new X-Files reboot, which is exciting.
Danielle Deadwyler is in this Steve Carell show coming soon, which we'll hopefully be reviewing. Yes, Rooster. Have you watched any of it yet?
I haven't yet. I think we'll end up doing it next week, won't we?
Yes, there you go. She's having a good time. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Winona Ryder has joined the cast of Wednesday season 3.
Which is incredibly star-studded, isn't it, Wednesday these days? It's got like, you know, an array.
I don't understand Wednesday.
No,
and yes, not just because it's the middle of the week, but because the show is fine. I don't understand why it's as big a hit as
it
is.
But we talked about this before. It's because all the tweens are watching it, aren't they?
That is presumably the reason.
Yeah. Like, it is very enjoyable to them. It's very enjoyable to those lovely young people. Yeah, I can understand it. It's and it's funny.
I mean, it's okay.
It's not meant for you.
No,
it's not probably meant for you. It's not meant for you.
What else have we got? Well, Ed Skrein has been cast as Balder in the God of War TV series. I have to say, that is great casting.
Oh.
He's got big Balder energy to me. That's probably
What's
not
his name?
A compliment. Ed Skrein.
I keep thinking you're saying Baldrick, by the
no,
way.
No, he does not have big like Baldrick see, energy, but I'd he does like have see, a cunning plan.
I'd like to see him as Baldrick.
Yes. No, he's going to be the god Balder in God of War, which
Balder.
Is a...
Balder, how do you pronounce that?
B-A-L-D-U-R.
D-U-R, okay.
Yes, one
it's
of the Norse gods.
You are bolder than I am.
No. He has a full head of hair, in fact.
Oh, okay.
He does.
Yes, but he's an interesting antagonistic character, so...
Mm. Oh, he's very nice. He looks nice.
He's Dario Naharis 1.0 from Game of Thrones before he was replaced by Michael Husman.
Which is controversial.
Yes. What else has happened? We should mention that, very sadly, Eric Dane of Grey's Anatomy did in fact die of ALS this week, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Incredibly sad.
And he was only 53 years old.
Yeah, it's so sad. So sad. And also, Patrick Dempsey's come out and said that he had planned to reunite with him on his new show before his death. So his new show, Memory of a Killer, which is so sad. It's horrible.
He is sad. Obviously, best known, I guess, for playing McSteamy, Dr. Mark Sloan in Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
But he was in, I think he was in X-Men, The Last Stand as well. He's been in a whole bunch of things. And he was in Bad Boys, Ride or Die quite recently as well. But yeah, very, very sad indeed. And he put a, there was a very emotional video that was doing the rounds on social media where he was delivering a message to his kids when he was in the final stages of his disease.
So. Famous last words. Yeah. It's incredibly sad and awful.
Yes, indeed it is. Right, I think we'll end news there and we will move into this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have Marshalls on Paramount Plus. This is, in fact, the first of three Yellowstone spin-offs to drop this year with, as Steph mentioned earlier, the Madison following in just a week or so. This picks up with Luke Grimes' character, Case Dutton, who Yellowstoners will be very familiar with, and he abandons ranch work here to join the U.S. Marshal Service and hunt down ne'er-do-wells each week. And if this sounds a lot less like your traditional Taylor Sheridan serial and more like a network procedural, that's because that's exactly what it is. This is a CBS show, Sheridan's first network show, I believe, and not even really a Sheridan show because he doesn't write it either. So it's basically a CBS cop procedural with added Stetsons and badged with the Yellowstone brand. In fact, it was called Why Marshals for a while, but then that makes it sound a little bit, you know...
Why Marshals?
Why Marshals? But can this live up to the Yellowstone brand? That is the question. Steph, are you a Yellowstoner?
I have watched Yellowstone in... It's not quite recovery TV for me, but I watched it kind of like it was on because my husband watches it. And so I watched it a bit in the background. So I wouldn't say I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. It was just on. Do you know those kinds of shows?
It?
I've seen it.
Watson is what you're saying.
It's no Watson. It was fine.
Yeah.
But I know people are really obsessed with Yellowstone. They're real Yellowstoners. For me, it wasn't, I don't know, I didn't ever really get into it.
Do you know who's a massive Yellowstone fan?
Is it Kay?
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Oh.
When I interviewed Kate Mulgrew, she was telling me how much she loves Yellowstone.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Now I just feel bad.
Yeah, she should.
Okay. All right. Are you a Yellowstone fan?
No.
Okay. Are you a Yellowstone fan?
No.
Oh, this is... Oh.
Yeah, I must admit, I very much enjoy Taylor Sheridan's stuff.
It's mystifying as to why we're reviewing this show, considering it's a procedural, it's a spin-off from a show none of us particularly like, and there's plenty of other good things we could have done instead.
Okay.
But, you know,
boy, is Loki furious about this.
What I will say is, to your point, this is a CBS procedural police drama, okay? And it absolutely is. And can it stand alone as that? It's like what you'd expect if you like those kinds of things, which, again, very comforting television. I enjoyed it in as much as you can enjoy a CBS procedural.
See, I think, but hang on, this is your kind of TV.
No.
But you like a police procedural, don't you?
I do like a... So what I'm saying is, I did enjoy it, but... Because I'm not a massive Yellowstone fan.
Do you need to be?
I don't think
you need any Yellowstone knowledge for this.
Which is why I could enjoy it. But they do reference Yellowstone things. And I had to like go, oh God, yeah, oh, his wife died here. And why has he got this thing with his son and all of that kind of stuff. And you do have to know a bit of background of why, you know, why he's a marshal, when his family were these ranch owners, and what is, you know, what's the jeopardy for him?
You only need to know if you really care.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You guys don't care. I think... My point is that you can watch this without having watched Yellowstone.
Yes.
That is my point.
Yes. Oh, right. I thought you were making the opposite point.
No. I'm saying you can watch this. You can Wikipedia what happens in Yellowstone and you can watch this. And it can stand alone as just an absolutely fine police procedural. But my other point is there are lots of other much better police procedurals that you should watch instead of this. Would you say that's a fair point, Boyd Helm?
Do you know what? I was absolutely furious that we were...
You're still angry.
Because so much good stuff coming. I mean, a lot of it is embargoed, to be fair to James, but we somewhere ended up doing... I was like, oh God, you know, I don't watch Yellowstone. I've watched, you know, bits of Yellowstone from time to time.
Yes, yeah, so like me.
To keep track of popular culture. And it's a huge, gigantic success. I mean, it's been one of the TV stories of the last decade or so, which is why there's a constant stream of spin-offs from the factory that puts out this stuff. So I was absolutely dreading it. But you know what? It's a lot better than I expected, I would say. Just purely in terms of, like, technically, you expect a primetime procedural show, which are the biggest, but let's face it, the biggest shows on American TV, apart from the events like the Super Bowl, etc., are police procedurals, or at least, you know, this type of thing. This is the type of thing that keeps CBS and other networks going. Not, there are hardly any comedies anymore, but they're still churning out spin-off from this kind of show, and CSIs and NCISs and all of these things are still going absolutely strong, right? And they're all very generic, and that's why they do well, because they are, you know, your kind of recovery show. If you've got tonsillitis, then you're going to sit down and watch an episode of this. But what I thought was interesting about this is it's very technically well made. You know, there's action sequences that are really well done, really well directed, I thought. For James's eyebrows already.
You got the eyebrow.
Okay, well, technical things, James always takes the lead. It's probably spotted somewhere.
MLED volume now.
CGI air volume. Yeah. And you know, there's fighting and there's killing and murdering that I thought was all very well done. Better. I think we've reached, it's kind of like the nature of peak TV, isn't it? Peak TV is so, which this is not an example, of course. But
no, it's not.
Peak TV is so technically adept and cinematic, etc., which is why we do this fucking podcast, that even the procedurals now, they're definitely on not on that level, you know, in terms of the writing, the acting, etc. I thought the son wasn't a very good actor. Anyway, sorry.
Can't believe you singled him out.
Well,
meanie.
He's an adult.
Yeah.
So, bottom line, technically, I thought it was better. You know, it was perfectly fine. But there's absolutely no way I'm going to ever watch any of it ever again. But in and of itself, I thought it was, you know, it was well done, is what I would say.
I feel completely opposite. Oh. I think any individual episode of NCIS or CSI is better than this.
Oh, okay. Fine.
So
to be fair, I haven't watched an episode of any of those shows.
Right,
for years,
there you go. Because I would say they are technically very proficient. Oh. So that's what I was disappointed. So I was like, you can't, that's why I'm saying you can watch this, but you should watch CSI Miami or watch something like that, because they're better.
Oh, okay.
So I think I don't really understand why they've chosen. I think it's because he's one of the most beloved characters, isn't he?
I love the way you're asking
me. I think that's why they've decided to do this, but there are better there are so much better police procedures than this, and they don't. This, I don't know. There's no room for it. I don't see what the point of it is.
It's
also
an odd thing to do.
That's what I mean. It's odd
to get this kind of dynastic peak TV serialized sort of, like, because all of these shows, you know, you got the one with Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren, you know, got the Michelle Pfeiffer one. I watched all of Yellowstone 1883, which was fantastic. You know, they all feel very epic and prestige and premium. And then this is a random network procedural, and it seems like such an odd extension of that universe.
I agree.
And when I said we should review this, I'll be honest with you, I didn't realize that's what it was.
God.
I thought it was like a proper Yellowstone spin-off, like prestige type thing.
This is like, he's actually so angry.
He is
furious. In our text group, I was literally going to, when you first just, I was going to, like, you do realize this is a police procedural boring thing. I didn't, for some reason, I couldn't be bothered. I was busy.
Well,
I couldn't argue. I was,
it's on you then, isn't it? I didn't know. And when I watched it, I was profoundly disappointed when I was like, This is one of those. And the only thing it has really going for it, I guess, is two things. One is the location shooting is stunning.
Yeah, that's like what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The vistas are gorgeous. Yeah. Like, it makes the absolute most of that American landscape and the big nature, which I thought was great.
Yeah, but you can get that elsewhere. You
sure.
get that in Landman.
You're not
going to
get
Landman.
What? In where?
Landman. Like Landman.
What if we're on Taylor Sheridan? Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You're not going to get it in CSI Miami, though, are you?
No, but you
which
get,
crucially is not shot in Miami. I know, because I've been on set.
I'm saying that's one of the redeeming features of it. You can get that elsewhere with a better storyline.
Yes, and I'm with Steph. Actually, I think this is a substandard procedural. I think like, it looks beautiful, and I think the connection.
I was just talking about how it looks. Really, the script and the dialogue.
Yeah,
it's acting
not good. And I thought the story. This first one, I thought this is just
completely
nonsense.
Oh, I wasn't really. Talking
it was
about that,
so like, I was so disinterested and so bored by it. And look, I don't like procedurals. That's absolutely true. And I don't like. I don't like, you know, this kind of episodic television generally. But so it's not really my thing. But even then, I don't think this is a great example of the genre. I think, you know, for people who like Yellowstone completionists, like people who can't get enough Yellowstone.
Completionists? Is that a word?
It is now.
I don't know. We're going to need another crunch on that.
It's a completist, but I'm going to own completionist. Yeah. I'm going to take that one. You know, boy, I'm going to make sure it's happened at some point here. Yeah. So
after my earlier grammatical stumblings,
if you are a Yellowstone completist, if you want to get more Dutton in your veins, I guess this is a way to do it. Apparently, and this is absolutely true, rumors suggest the series will finally address the wolf visions that Case experienced in Yellowstone season 4. So you got that to look forward to. But really, there's just no reason
but
to
I
watch
guarantee
this.
This will be a massive hit, I'm guaranteed.
Oh, probably.
Because to your point when you said, you know, I can't, what is such a weird thing? I think it's a completely obvious thing to do. If you're creating spin-offs from this gigantic IP that was Yellowstone, you're obviously going to try and do one that is a procedural. You might as well, you've done it with all the other different things. So, and I bet it'll be a massive hit on CBS.
I'm sure it will be a massive hit. It's just, I want people to watch other things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
It's been reasonably well received, I believe.
It has, yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it's not for me.
No.
God, we're all in agreeance.
Yeah. Really? Now I know why they didn't call it Why Marshals, because the answer would have been, yeah, right, why? there we go, claws out. Anyway, Marshals then, which lands on Paramount Plus, I believe, on the 2nd of March.
Correct.
Yes. Next up this week, we have Young Sherlock on Prime Video, the Sherlockian origin story based on the book series by Andy Lane, and it sees Hero finds Tiffin as the famous detective who, at Oxford, teams up with his new Bezzy mate, one James Moriarty, played by Donal Finn, a.k.a. the Wheel of Time's Matt Cawthon, to solve crimes.
Of course.
Clearly what he's best known for. Yeah. It starts with loud music and a chase, which I believe is the obligatory PSA that Guy Ritchie is involved in this one. Boydie, what did your investigation turn up on this?
Well.
Oh.
What?
I don't know. I thought, okay. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think this is interesting, isn't it? Because as I said before, when you were talking about, what's it called? Elementary? No, Elementary was the
Watson.
Watson.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. It's so confusing because there have been so many.
It's out of copyright and anyone can have a bite of it.
Everyone and anyone has a go. So there are so many spin-offs from and adaptions of Sherlock and associated characters that to have, I guess there's a point in having this one, which is like a YA take on it. So Sherlock is at Oxford University, dragged there by his brother, Mycroft. And of course, he also meets Moriarty at the same time, who, by the way, as you say, Donal Finn, who I thought, was it just me or was he slightly trying to challenge Andrew Scott's version of Moriarty from Sherlock? Is it an Irish actor? kind of, it's just similar intonation. That was maybe just me, maybe being
You can't challenge Andrew unfair. Scott's
no,
version.
Of course not. No. Well, I feel this way, but to be honest, I feel this way about the whole show. The problem for me, and I know, obviously, Guy Ritchie did his Sherlock Holmes films.
He did.
Which good.
Yeah.
I think the first Sherlock Holmes film is one of the best things Guy Ritchie's ever done.
Oh my God, Robert Downey Jr. is unbelievable in that. Really he's good, a great really Sherlock. Great.
Very, very well cast. Captured the spirit of the show. But then you had, obviously, the BBC Sherlock with Cumberbatch and Freeman, etc., Stephen Moffat. And it was just one of my favourite shows of all time. So this has a lot to live up to, not only the film, which is good, but also that. And I felt like I have various problems with it. One is in this introductory opening episode where they're kind of trying to establish Sherlock and all these other characters and how they fit into his world in this YA segment of his life. It takes ages for them to get to any kind of mystery to solve. Mm. Way too long. You could have just completely dispensed with half of the first 40 minutes of the first episode.
Yep. I agree.
To get to the fucking point of a case for Sherlock. And B, I'm not convinced that many of the cast are anywhere near good enough or charismatic enough. I don't know Hero finds Tiffin. I'm sorry, mate, but I'm sure he doesn't listen to this podcast. I hope he doesn't.
He might.
But I just thought he was not charismatic, slightly stilted. Just, I don't know. I didn't get his casting. I think the strongest, Michael, I think Max Irons is good as Mycroft. Max Irons is, I think, is genuinely a fun character. But, and Donald Finn is pretty good as Moriarty. Certainly much better as Moriarty than Hero finds Tiffin as a shot. But that was the main problem for me. And then it's nice. Again, you know, it looks great. It looks good. Good/great. I'm not sure, but, you know, and it uses Oxford quite well. What looks like Oxford, they probably filmed it down the road in Luton.
Uses Oxford quite well, Boyd
yeah.
Hilton.
Yeah.
Do you think, yes, Boydie, that the problem with this partially,
yes,
is that Gatiss and Moffat Sherlock exists?
Exactly. I mean, that was eventually, absolutely 100% is part of the problem. Because this isn't a procedural version of Sherlock, which what Elementary and Watson are. So they've got that. They're not even trying to be like Sherlock, like Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat Sherlock. So, and Steve Thompson, who wrote some of the best episodes, by the way, of Sherlock, he was the other writer of that show. But the performances are so, and I'm going to use the word iconic, but if there anything deserves to be called iconic, it is those two, Freeman and Cumberbatch. And of course, Andrew Scott. It made Andrew Scott an instant massive superstar because he was so brilliant as Moriarty. So this just feels like weak soup.
Yeah.
Weak soup. Is that a thing?
Yeah, no, weak
sauce is a thing.
Weak soup. You can have weak soup. If you can have completionist, you can have weak soup. That's your one.
Yeah.
Right. I think if you are going to, copyright aside, if you're going to endeavor to make something like this, make something else, you better be damn sure that it's going to be so much better than something that's already around, okay? Because otherwise,
or at least a different take, something special.
Because it is a different take.
They've made sure that it's a different take. They've done the one thing, it is the different take. But the different, you do have to think, right, okay, like, I mean, I don't know anyone who doesn't like those versions, okay? So I really did not like this at all. I thought it was amalgamation of completely unnotable performances. I started to, that's not a word, is it?
I think we're all challenging grammar.
I don't know what is happening this week. I really don't.
Sorry, yeah, not
it's
noteworthy.
It's impossible.
None of the performances were noteworthy. Put it that way.
You're right.
So much so that I started to not really realise who was I was watching. I was like, oh, who is that? I think when you watch it, the thing for me when I'm watching something like this, I was like, oh, who are they going to make Moriarty? Who are they going to make Watson? That's the thing that was interesting. I enjoyed it so much less than I did watching Watson, the medical drama
that's an
of
indictment.
It. Yeah. I just, okay, they use the, do you remember when we coined the whole smash card things? You know, they had the smash cards.
Smash cards.
Smash cards have returned to little to no effect. I just, the story was so hard to follow and then I also just didn't give a shit about it. No. You know what I mean? It's like it's too long to establish who's who. It's not funny, witty, he's not clever enough.
The best person in it was Colin Firth, and I said this a couple of weeks ago that, you know, he's quite big on the poster. It feels like it's a kind of just a cameo.
It does feel like a small role,
but he is so fun instantly, much more fun than everyone else, and much more charismatic than everyone else, that it's like, oh, you just want more of him. Really.
There's no charisma is key. There's no charisma.
Yeah,
there's no fun. It's not witty.
Yeah.
It's not clever. I just, oh God, I really didn't like it at all. I found it, I think it's a really good point that you make about how long it takes to get to them actually solving
mystery. That's ridiculous.
And the mystery's fucking boring anyway. Like, no one gives a shit about fucking whatever the mystery, won't give the mystery away, but no one cares about it, do they? So it's like, oh,
I do think the pacing is the problem here because it takes so long to get anywhere. And by the time, you could eject all of that stuff, how it begins, the prison sequence, how he gets to Oxford. Nobody cares about any of that. And maybe it's just that they're in the books and they felt the need to include it, but it's just like, just get to the point, because 20 minutes in, you don't know why you're watching it. You don't know what the purpose is. Yeah. There's a really, I watched Good Will Hunting on the weekend and I'm like, this is basically a scene from Good Will Hunting. Like, what are you doing? Where he's the janitor, but hey, he's smarter than the students. And it's just like, it's quite dull. And then suddenly he gets wrapped, a mystery. And it's Moriarty and Sherlock solving a mystery. And once that happens, I was more interested. I didn't dislike it as much as you did, Steph. I thought once it got going, I thought, okay, now I'm, I know why I'm here. This is actually okay. But even that runs out of steam. So it was just it could be that it takes a while to get going this first episode, as is often the case with scene setting ones, is a little uneven, but I will not find out.
I'm more interested in the fact that you watched Good Will Hunting at the weekend in the middle of your Broadchurch episodes. You're really up to date now.
I found time to watch Good Will Hunting as well. I had seen Good Will Hunting before, I should point out. It was not a first watch.
There's this really good film called Shawshank Redemption. you should watch that.
Thank you, Steph. That's a good recommendation. yes. Is it one of your favourite films already?
Okay. I love Google Hunting, to be fair to you. Yeah, it's one of my favourite films. How about them apples?
Indeed. Well, how about these apples? Oh, I'm these saying apples absolutely not.
Yeah. Weak apples.
We don't
weak
want
sauce,
its number.
Weak
I can't
soup.
Believe we're agreeing again on something. Oh, wow.
It's offensive.
Yeah. This show was weak soup. There's no denying it. Young Sherlock, then, which is on Prime Video.
Hold on. Wednesday, the 4th of March, 2026.
Fabulous. Finally this week, we have DTF St. Louis, a show that is being billed as a dark comedy. And this stars Jason Bateman and David Harbour as a pair of suburban husbands who decide to spice up their midlife slumps by signing up to the titular dating app for married people, DTF St. Louis, only for one of them to end up dead. And who do you call when you need to get into the mind of a killer and solve a murder? Why, Steph Seelan, of course. What did you think of DTF St. Louis? Please notice that I didn't ask if you were DTF with this, which would have been, frankly, an HR issue. So yeah, that's why I avoided that.
I will say I was very much DTF with this. This is right up my street, a kind of a dark mystery. One of the things I also have to hold my hands up and say, I will watch anything with Jason Bateman in, because I am a huge Jason Bateman fan. And I think he has this unbelievable quality of being able to be Jason Bateman always in everything, but playing such crazy different characters. Like, did you watch, in White Rabbit, he's like a crazy different character, Arrested Development, but he's always still Jason Bateman. Does that make sense?
Yes.
He's a chameleon and not a chameleon.
I know what you're saying, that he does play a variety of different genres and roles because he is an actor, and that's fine. But there is a Bateman-iness that he always retains. Like, there's a core of Batemanosity.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know whether it's his, his speech pattern or what it is, because he's got quite a distinctive voice. But he's, but also, I'd just like to say, in every single role, I have not seen anything with Jason Bateman in that I haven't really, really enjoyed. I think he picks, he makes excellent choices, and this is no exception. So,
do you think he's lost too much weight, though? He looks very scrawny in this. Do you think?
I think that's part of his character, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe. Carry on.
I think it's part of his character is, this sunny. Yeah. So he plays this sunny weatherman. David Harbour is the, when this is not a spoiler, this is just the setup. So he is the sign language person. Is that the right way to...
He's a sign interpreter.
They are caught in a huge storm together, and they're sort of brought together and they become friends. And then... what then happens is, as we said, we're not going to give it away, but someone ends up dead and there is a love triangle in it. But for me, the absolute hero, and just she's so amazing in this, is Linda Cardellini of ER. A wonderful actress who I don't think gets enough plaudits. If you know her, you'll know her from ER. She's in lots of stuff. She's so brilliant in this show as this kind of, it's got this like seedy underbelly of like gross, awful things that can happen in these small towns, and just her sort of awakening in amongst it is so incredible to watch, and she plays it brilliantly. So I think she almost has overtaken my love of Jason Bateman in this performance. But David Harbour, again, is brilliant in this. There's an amazing scene, again, I'm not giving anything away, where he at some point has to take up hip-hop dancing. And it's got these little injections of comedy that are really pleasing, but it is dark. They do play it like where almost every scene is kind of, it hits with a dramatic, like a bit of dramatic, a real dramatic scene, and it always feels like it could, every scene could be the end of the episode. But it's dark, and I really, really enjoyed it. We did get a list of things not to say about spoiling it, so I'm going to be really careful.
You basically can't say anything.
But if you love Jason Bateman, definitely watch it. If you love any kind of murder mystery, definitely watch it. It's absolutely fantastic.
Is it? Would you describe it as a dark comedy?
Yes, it's exactly a dark comedy.
I didn't find it darkly comedic.
Didn't you?
I would have felt, I'd call it a like a dark mystery, but I was like, I was waiting for the jokes. And I'm not sure that, maybe it's just contractually that when you cast Jason Bateman, it's automatically then a comedy of some kind because he's in it. But it's not, I mean, I don't think I detected a joke, let alone.
I know what you mean. I was expecting it to be more comedic than it actually is. And I think it's so, you don't get, there are comedies which don't rely on jokes, so to speak, but at least funny comedic moments. And there are moments, mostly, I think most of the comedy actually comes from Richard Jenkins' character, the detective, who has this kind of irascible,
detective.
He's a bit bumbling, but actually he's kind of maybe quite clever, but he definitely has a kind of like an oddball approach.
He's the okay boomer detective.
And Richard Jenkins is, I think he's the star of the show, actually.
You think he's better than Indica?
I do. Because he hasn't, there's a Richard Jenkins-esque quality to all his roles as well. You could say the same about him.
Yeah.
But I think he's got the most, I think he's got the best written, most interesting role. And I have issues with this show, I have to say. I'm quite
really?
Yeah. I think it's massively flawed in various ways. So, for example, there's some weird things. Like, for example, when Jason Bateman's character, the weatherman, does not involve his lawyer in anything that happens. Doesn't seem to have a lawyer. He's a nationally famous weatherman. He's got a gigantic poster of himself on the side of a building in where they live. And he that's insane.
That's whole part of his character. He's like this. No. He's kind of like he's got this rural innocence. He's a rural weatherman. He's not like an international weatherman.
It's a city. It's a town. It's not that rural.
Everything that happens in this takes him by surprise, and that's his innocence.
This show really annoyed me to start with. I think every scene went on too long. I think there's pacing issues. There's one moment, right, where two characters go to this juice place.
What's Jamba Juice.
Jamba Juice, right. And this summed up this show. I think it's in episode two. I watched the first three episodes.
Me too.
And there's a slow pan across Jamba Juice, like the shop, the store. And it just goes on for about like 30 seconds. I'm like, just cut to fucking they're in Jamba Juice. Why do you need... So there's something that stylistically, it's almost this show... There's something interesting about, and I think part of the reason why it doesn't seem like a comedy is it's so beautifully shot. It is absolutely. Do you remember that flashback bit with David Harbour and the guy in the street in the road? Have you seen that bit? I think it's in episode two.
Yeah,
actually, sorry,
that is beautiful.
But it's literally like golden sunlit,
it's silhouetted,
stunning images. The police station where the interrogations take place. There's this like weird concrete, beautiful modernist thing that could extract out of the Brutalist or something. Every shot is stunning. This is supposed to be like a comedy, but that's partly why I think the dark comedy element of it falls flat, because it's a bit ponderous, because it's kind of a bit in love with its own beauty. And I do find I've got a bit of an issue these days with comedies. This isn't a flat-out comedy at all, as James says,
isn't.
I agree. But you do get shows that have a little bit of a comedic element to it, being so stunningly beautiful. Things are too beautiful. And I felt that about this. Like, more attention had been given to the design of it and the cinematography of it, as opposed to the kind of pace. And I thought it was I think this show is a bit White Lotus-y. It's a bit like suburban sex games, White Lotus-y. But think how brilliant White Lotus is with its pacing. Even when it's introducing characters, it still manages to keep you absolutely gripped. But do you know what happened though? In episode two, when Richard Jenkins gets really into gear, I thought he was so good, and it really picked up for me. And by the end of episode two, I had to carry on watching more, and I've only watched episode three, and it gets better and better.
It does.
I think I'm pretty much fully on board now. But it is
done a full reverse ferret on this whole thing.
But this is I think people are going to have an issue. I think the first episode is too slow and too in love with itself, and I want it to get to the point. And when it does get to the point, it's good.
I think the drawn out scenes. I know. The drawn out scenes are part of it, because the whole part of it is that you're being drawn into this story. I, again, I've talked about this before. For me, that pacing is very much integral to the show.
Yeah, it just didn't work for me. I thought it was too much.
But then it did work for you, because you said you watched the show
in the end, but I think people might not tune in for episode two after we're running out of time.
Okay.
We have run out of time, in fact. I didn't love it for a lot of the reasons that Boyd said. I didn't dislike it. I was interested because they're great characters, but I wasn't hugely compelled by that first episode. I didn't watch any more after that, which may be how other people land on it. But that is all we've got time for this week. So what else is out this week? Very, very quickly, we've mentioned some of it. The Capture is out on Sunday, which is series, three of that, I think. Gone is out on ITV, also on Sunday. We will, I think, tackle that next week. Yeah. Outlander is back for series 8 on Saturday. Ted is back, unfortunately, for us. Series 2 on Friday. What is it? Vladimir, which we're going to be doing on Pilot Plus. That is landing on Netflix on
Thursday
as well. And that is more or less it, I would say. What is our pick of the week?
DTF, St. Louis.
I mean, it is DTF.
Stick with it, people.
I mean, it's Slim Pickings, isn't it? So, yes, brilliant. We hope you enjoyed the show. I don't know how we happened any of this, if I'm honest with you, because it's all gone a little bit off the rails. We ran over quite badly. But we hope you liked it. Please leave us a 5-star rating. We will be back next week. Many, many, many more shows are happening next week, including Gone, Rooster, as we mentioned with Steve Carell, is coming. One Piece is coming back. We won't be reviewing that. I'm so sorry. Scarpetta lands on Prime, which is the Nicole Kidman adaptation, which is very interesting. And there's another Yellowstone show in the Madison. Who knows what we'll end up doing, but we hope you enjoyed the podcast. People are staring at me with evil in their eyes. Oh, this has been absolutely shambolic. Week soup, everyone. Week soup.
No.
See you Thursday. Pilot out.
Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.